The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Asking the quasi-philosophical question, if Dr. Ray speaks on the radio and no one is listening, will your kid still be more pleasant? Will your husband pick up his socks? And will your mother-in-law acknowledge that you are the best mother she has ever seen? Good to have you. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Good to be here. Program number. Notice how I'm speaking in just fragmented sentences. My sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Elgis, who used to bloody up my papers. Oh, man, she would have awk in the... awk, A-W-K, stands for awkward. In the margins, the sentence structure. I had to leave a lot of margins so Mrs. Elgis could write awk. Oh, my gosh, my papers looked like they were just bleeding from every place after she was done. She didn't worry about the red pen. You know how they say you can't use a red pen that's too hostile. I got to use a blue pen. Maybe a nice teal, something in a mauve. Anyway, good to have you with me here. I am a psychologist. That's what I do for a living. That's what I've done for a living for oh so long. In doing this, hopefully I can offer a thought or two or some perspective, some idea, some answering one of your clinical questions you don't understand. Not doing therapy, not doing diagnosis, not at all stepping on the turf if you're seeing a professional therapist. We can't do that. But we can talk here, see what we can come up with. Maybe something help you out. Something help me out. You folks help me out a lot. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL is the number. If you're like me, if you're like humans, you have often wondered, I don't get God. I don't understand him. Now, the major problem, one of the major, major, major questions about God is, why is there suffering? Why does God permit all this suffering, especially to me? But it goes beyond that. We tend to think, I don't get why God would allow this. I don't get why he's doing this. As I see it, he's doing it. I just don't understand. And it goes beyond that for many people. It doesn't stop at I don't understand. It moves into that's not how I would do it, or I don't agree with that, or what kind of God is that? Those kinds of questions, those kinds of doubts and struggles have led many people away from the faith. They have. I don't get God, so therefore I either want no part of him or he doesn't exist. I am holding in my hands a pen. Can you see it? I'll hold it up to the microphone. Right there, see it? It's a pen. I look at this pen. It's blue. And I think I understand this pen. I put the click on here. And it writes. Ink comes out of this little ball at the tip of the pen. There you go. I really understand this pen. This pen, according to Physics 101, this is not nuclear particle physics. According to Physics 101, this pen is composed of incomprehensible trillions. That's like 1,000 billion. 1,000,000,000 atoms. And the subatomic parts. Back when I was in grad school, all I had to know was electron, proton, and neutron, and that's why I got a good grade in chemistry. We were just beginning chemistry back when I was in grad school. I don't think Teresa Tommy O had to take chemistry. They didn't have chemistry when she was in grad school. So, we now know that the countless trillions, probably quadrillions, maybe more, maybe quintillions, of atoms in this pen have subatomic particles in the dozens. All kinds of subatomic particles. And they're moving all over the place. And they're vibrating. And they're vibrating like really, really, really fast. How fast? Well, some of them up to the speed of light. Now, those of you who know the speed of light, it's real fast. It's like 80 miles an hour. The speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. Per second. Can you imagine anything in a pen moving at that speed? What's my point here? My point is this. I don't understand this little pen in front of me. I am completely wrong in knowing what this pen is. I am off by a power of many, many tens. Oh, I see what I see. It's blue, and I can hold it in my hand, and if I drop it, it'll go down and hit the ground. But that's nothing compared to the actual substance, the actual content of this pen. I do not remotely understand this pen. And then I'm arrogant enough to say, well, you know, God, I really don't get you. I don't get why you'd allow that to happen. I don't get why you do it that way. I mean, you know, Jesus didn't have to come and die. You could have just declared us all saved, couldn't you? That's not the way I would do it. Every time I am tempted to say, I just don't get God. You know that? I just don't get him. I better take out my pen. You don't have to use a pen. You can use car keys. You can use the chair you're sitting on. You can use anything in the physical universe. And remind yourself, I have no idea. It is incomprehensible to me. The functioning, the substance, all of the complexities of what I'm holding in my hand. I'm not even close to understanding this pen. And yet I arrogate to myself the idea that, well, what's God doing here? I don't get it. I don't get him. This is a question the believers wrap themselves in. But non-believers, people who say, I don't really want to believe because I don't understand God. I just look at them and go, you don't understand the pen in your hand. You want to understand the creator of the universe? Oh. Hold a pen in your hand the next time you say, I don't get why God is doing this or allowing this to happen or why he did it this way or why this occurred. I just don't get it. I don't get him. Take out your pen, would you? 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. Thank you for joining me.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. You should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
When I was outside of the church, there was always an unsettled feeling. There was always a feeling of something missing and something not complete. The deal clincher is we found our way to our parish. And we met just an incredible pastor. We learned things that we had never been taught. Wouldn't be the person that I am without the church and without the sacraments, particularly the Eucharist. I can't live without it.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Minutes psych aerobic workout with breaks in between, interval training, intense IQ raising, and then you get the rest. Good calls up there. Let me give you the number again so we get some more lines. 877-573-7825, 877-57 equal. That's the number to call if you'd like to get onto the phone. Stephanie from Peoria, Illinois is having hypnagogic hallucinations. That's what she called them. Right, Stephanie?
No, not exactly.
Well, you should have. You would have sounded really smart.
Well, I've about 9 months ago, I had two episodes right in a row, and I noticed that both times my head was, I was lying flat on my back, and my head was turned to the left. And what was so scary about them was it felt like there was a steamroller rolling over my body up and down and up and down. And I noticed that each episode lasted the same, approximately the same amount of time, and they both ended in the same way with just a gradual dissipation, if you will. And
did you wake up? Did you wake up?
Eventually, yes. But the whole time I'm praying because I'm scared to death that I'm being attacked. And then 9 months went by, and I just had another one the other night. And it felt like I consciously knew that this wasn't the case, but it felt like I was being dragged halfway off the bed. And,
why were you scared? Stephanie, why were you scared?
I don't know. I guess I'm afraid of demonic attacks.
Okay.
I don't know. That's it's like my mind went there before I even woke up.
So that's my immediate
response.
You wouldn't be as afraid. I mean, that was a scary dream, obviously. You're being hurt in the dream. But you wouldn't be as afraid if you knew this wasn't the devil doing something with your head?
Correct.
Okay. If I told you 99.999% chance it's not the devil doing something with your head, would you feel better?
Yeah. And I'm kind of leaning towards that route because they all seem to last the same amount of time.
Stephanie, don't lean. Run toward that route.
Okay.
That's what it is. You're having what is called hypnagogic hallucinations. They occur usually in that vague twilight between sleep and consciousness. Sometimes they're very vivid, very vivid. I've heard voices in that hypnagogic state. I woke up, I thought somebody's talking to me. Well, nobody talking to me. It's hallucinating. Okay. If you experience that, you could say, well, why haven't I experienced it before? I don't know.
Yeah.
Just things happen as we get older. You know, things change physiologically for us. They change. And like Paul Harvey used to say, there's a lot more firsts as you get older. But I know almost for certain, as certain as I can be as a human, this is not a satanic attack. This is something that is occurring to you in that sleep-wake state that you're drifting through. And it can be scary, but if you recognize before you go to bed, here's what you do. You recognize before you go to bed, while you're awake, that it's possible you could have one of those, okay. And then it'll wake me up, and I'll recognize, oh, yeah, boy, that was an ugly dream. Whew, glad I'm awake. That'll help.
Okay.
There you go. As is so often the case, we get more scared of something because we think it means something a lot worse than it is. When you're thinking that the devil's coming after you in some way, wow, that is scary.
Yeah.
That's more scary than being crushed by a steamroller. But, by the way, you know, you could tell that steamroller, hey, I got a couple places on my body that need slimmed out. Why don't you do a little crusher there and slim it out, you know? I've had them too, Stephanie. They're reasonably okay. Common. All righty, dear. Thank you.
All right. Good to know. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All righty. I love when I get a chance to use those big words, you know, because you get some people can say, I know what you're going to say. I could do your show. Really? Did you know hypnagogic hallucinations? Karen says she'd like a Christian response, as opposed to a response, I guess. Hi, Karen. How are you? Karen, are you there, dear?
Yes, yes.
There you go.
Hi.
Okay. Hi. Now, here's the thing. I can give you a response. I don't know if I can give you a Christian response. Sometimes those are a little tougher to come up with, you know?
Well, I would settle for a good Christian Catholic response.
Ooh, now you're really narrowing it down. Good.
That's just to make it easy for you.
Oh, heavens. A good response is oftentimes in the tone of the response, because a good response can actually be quite blunt. It can be actually quite accurate. For example, your question here is, you got someone in your life, they want to take the vaccine, you don't. And they can't simply say to you, well, all right, I respect your decision. No, you're wrong, you're evil, you're hurting people, you're doing all kinds of bad things. And they don't like the fact that there are fetal cell lines, even far removed, as I understand it. And as I do understand it, our bishops are saying that it's permissible. But this person says, well, the fact that you believe the way you believe about this, you're just evil. To go that far?
Well, no, she hasn't gone that far. She's been very nice about it, actually. But her response is that she, like myself, is we would be considered pro-life activists. Because we pray before abortion clinics because of how we feel about abortion. But she said that she has decided to take the vaccine because that's the charitable thing to do. Well, that's where my problem is, because I'm not sure I agree that it is charitable to take a vaccine that would save myself when I've been praying for these babies that are being aborted. I don't think that's charitable.
Well, you know,
I just would like to have some kind of a kind response.
You just did it. Karen, you just said it. I was waiting because I didn't know what kind of kind response I could give you, but you did it. You said, I feel it's charitable for me not to take a vaccine that even remotely in the distance was made with aborted fetal cells or aborted fetuses or... Not even fetus, but even the cell lines. You said it. Now, what you're really asking is, how do I get my friend to understand and accept that that's my position? That's really what you're asking, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Now, see, that's a tough one. I can tell you what to say, and you can tell you what to say. But in terms of your friend going, oh, okay, Karen, I see now. Well, thank you for explaining that to me. I really respect that. And you know what? I think there's another question you're asking. Tell me if I'm way off here. I think your friend might be a little uncomfortable with your stance. Because if she, too, prays in front of abortion clinics, and if she, too, is a pro-life activist, and you're taking this position that is not necessarily obligatory, but your conscience is telling you this is what I want to do. Could that be a little bit of a threat to her?
It possibly could be.
Yeah. And
I think sometimes, too, that I might be feeling guilty about my stance.
That you're not respecting charitably other people and potential danger to them.
Yes.
Life is gray, my dear. It is gray. And we are called to follow our conscience. If our conscience is well-formed and in line with the teachings of the church, we're called to follow it. And it would seem, and I'm no theologian, certainly no priest, but it would seem that there would be those folks who would say to you in this situation, that is something that your conscience is directing you to do. I don't want to do this. And your worry that somehow you're going to be responsible very, very indirectly for someone else getting COVID. Well, you're wearing a mask, you're doing your social distancing, you're washing your hands, you're not going big crowds, you're doing those things. Every time, you know, I want to know something interesting, Karen? This is a little off the subject of your question. Every time this COVID stuff comes up, I'm amazed at how mad people get. They get nastier than any other subject we have ever talked about on this program. To me, that's an interesting phenomenon. I would say to your friend exactly what you said to me. My conscience just doesn't permit me to do that at this point. I'm willing to take the chance that I get COVID because I didn't take the vaccine. And I know exactly what your friend is going to say. Well, even if you don't want to take it, what about other people that you're risking? That's what she's going to say. That's what she's going to say. You're saying I had to make a choice.
Exactly what I'll do.
Yeah, and I'm bracing myself for the email. Do you want them? I can forward them on to you. I can say, don't blame me, blame Karen.
I appreciate you listening. And also, I guess I just needed to know that I wasn't totally off track.
Well, who am I to say you are or you aren't? But I can give you my perspective, and I'm hoping it's a reasonably informed one. But brace yourself, because your friend, and here's the other thing I think you haven't mentioned, but I think I'm going to mention it for you. You're kind of shocked that your friend doesn't understand your position, aren't you?
I am, because we have agreed on so many things concerning this.
I know.
So I guess that's probably where my doubts came in.
Well, this is bringing out, this whole COVID response is bringing out all kinds of differences, I dare say hostility, intolerance, anger, among people who once, you know, I have relatives who are not talking to each other, not in my family, but I know in other families, or I have friends who don't go around former friends anymore. Why? Well, because they disagree on masks, or they disagree on the extent of the numbers, or they disagree on the danger, or it's incredible what I've seen. The lack of tolerance and the hostility bred by this issue. It's amazing. Just amazing. It's a real psychological study, I'll tell you that. All righty. Good luck to you, dear.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much. God bless.
You're welcome. 877-573-7825 is the number to call to get on to the program in about 20 seconds, 25 seconds. A hard break is coming. So we got some folks who want to talk. I want to talk to you. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. The program The Doctor Is In, the television program, Living Right with Dr. Ray, on the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network on Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday mornings, 9:30 a.m., and the spot that they reserve for 8-year-olds playing Little League ball in right field so the ball doesn't come to them, 5 a.m. on Friday mornings. Eastern, of course. That which means it's 4 a.m. Central.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can, my whole self, to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Bishops in the Catholic Church are heralds of faith, according to the Catholic Catechism. Their first task is to teach and preach the gospel to all men and women. In this they are endowed with the authority of Christ. Christ, who is truth itself, willed to confer on the Church a share in his own infallibility in order that the people of God have true guidance as to his teaching. Christ thus endowed the Church's shepherds with the gift of infallibility when instructing in matters of faith and morals. The Pope enjoys infallibility when he proclaims by a definitive act a doctrine of faith and morals. This same infallibility is present in the College of Bishops only when, together with the Pope, they exercise the supreme magisterium, particularly in an ecumenical council. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
We don't really listen to people. We need to really listen to them.
I'm sorry, what'd you say? I know. My wife said to me last night, Raymond, are you even listening to me? And I thought to myself, now that's an odd way to start a conversation. Kevin from Ohio is facing a much, 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 much more common scenario now. It is exploding in frequency. There's a lot of debate, a lot of exploration as to why this all is. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dr. Ray. How's it going?
Got a 17-year-old daughter whose friend has said, I'm bisexual.
Yeah, actually, she's 13. But yeah, she's been on the swim team for 5 years now. It's her great group of friends, and I'm glad she told me. I spent driving home in the car, and she said they went to the restroom for a break in the middle of practice, and her best friend, one of her best friends on the team, said that she wanted to let everybody know that she's bisexual, and she's 13. And she's trying to figure out how she's going to tell her parents and her grandparents. And, of course, my daughter was shocked and didn't know what to say, although she did comment that all of the other friends, in keeping with the current culture,
were applauding
her and congratulating
her. And there are those researchers who have come out and said, and they have gotten in trouble for saying this, have come out and said, we have to look at the social component to some of this. When it is celebrated across the board, among the peer group, is that a factor in children saying, I think this is what I am? Now, to say that, for some people, that's absolute heresy. You can't say that. You have to just automatically accept what this 13-year-old says, even though the research says that when a 13-year-old is sexually confused, especially a girl, that in the passage of time, many of them revert to their heterosexual orientation. There is research that says this. Two questions for your daughter. One, why does she think she has to talk to her friend?
I think she's worried that her friend's going to nail her down, because they talk a lot. Like, I think she's concerned that her friend's going to ask her directly one-on-one. So what do you think?
And if she says, I really need to know more about how you decided this. Are you saying you're attracted to guys and you're also attracted to girls? explain that to me. Help me out. Help me to understand that. I would take a position of, let me hear more from your perspective on how you came to this conclusion. Rather than, oh, well, I think whatever's fine for you is fine for you. Or, oh, yeah. Well, no, I think you're totally morally wrong. Just avoid that and say, tell me, explain this to me.
Just ask questions.
Ask questions. Find out. Let this girl explain. By the way, Kevin, this is really a common phenomenon now. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So what I was going to say is I think this girl is a little bit overweight. She did things like dye her hair, you know, so I think there's a little bit of self-consciousness. Maybe she doesn't think that she's really attractive to boys or something. Maybe there's some of that going on. I don't know.
And it can be. That one thing that is clear, we are very much, as a culture, incredibly confusing our young people sexually, especially in adolescence. They're so confused about what is good, what is bad, what is permissible, what is celebrated, what is not celebrated, what is without any question, not even related to morals. That's a phenomenon that is there. And I can tell you in the last 10 years, maybe five, the adults who have come to me telling me that their son or daughter has now said, I am attracted to same sex, or I am in fact transgender, has exploded, absolutely exploded. Now, one explanation for that, of course, is, well, now they're becoming more free to explain this, to come out with it, to express it. That's why. It's always been there. But if you look at some of the statistics informally, the numbers are really higher than what traditional numbers have been, even in anonymous surveys. Just as an anecdotal type thing. My daughter worked at a fast food place, and I think there were 15 boys there. Because I asked her, how many boys there? 15. And she said, six of them said they are same-sex attracted. That's 40%. Now, when you get a number like that, you can interpret it a number of ways. You can say, well, it just so happened that those kids who were that orientation were attracted to working at that fast food place. Or you could say there's something else going on other than innate same-sex attraction. You could say that. Yeah.
Your advice to her be, I want to make sure that I'm clear to her, is just she should just keep asking questions.
Yeah, how did you come to this conclusion? And the other thing I would have is I would wonder if this young lady is confused about a lot of things. I would wonder if she's discontent in her relationships with boys. I would wonder, you know, that's a factor I've seen as a therapist, where these young girls don't like guys. The guys are jerks. Guys are unpleasant. Yep. They've had a bad experience with guys. And so, therefore, in a culture that says, choose whichever direction sexually you wish to go.
Whatever you want.
You can say, yeah, I think I'd be more comfortable with somebody of my own sex. Yeah, that is there. And for women, young girls, the emotional is generally more prevalent than the physical. For the boys, it's opposite. It's the physical. So, all righty. Yeah. And tell her not to get in too deep, because I think she may find herself hearing things about her friend that go beyond the sexual confusion, that move into other emotional issues. If that happens, I think your daughter may find herself well in over her head.
And she just, when if she's not feeling comfortable, she just needs to know when to stop and say,
yeah,
I've, yeah.
Yeah. And okay. she doesn't need to necessarily take it upon herself to reorient this young friend of hers.
Yep.
All right, my friend.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Thank you.
All
God bless.
All righty. Thank you, sir. 877-573-7825, 877-57 equal is the number to call. I've got some help there with a healthcare worker who's going to help me out. She gets COVID questions all the time. That's one of the neat things about doing this program, is that it's almost like having a massive culture-wide, society-wide wire service where people can say, here's my experience, Dr. Ray. I'll throw this in the hopper, and you can weigh it with all the other things. And this is one of the reasons why I read all these books, because you people just keep giving me material that I can use. So, Sheila, you hang in there. Let me get a number out so we can have more folks, too. 877-573-7825 is the number. If you want to call in with a question or comment, like Sheila's comment is going to be helpful. And we get a lot of that in this program. It's not necessarily the question about a circumstance in someone's life, but it is a comment or a helpful suggestion. And you know, I got something on a DNA question, too. I got to get to that if I get a chance. It's Dr. Ray.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Call to communion.
Through Edmonton Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
The Brushes and the Saxophone, two really cool instruments. Sheila from Rochester, Minnesota. She's a healthcare worker. She gets COVID questions all the time. And she said, "Dr. I heard you stumbling around trying to answer the vaccine questions. So once again, I'm going to step in and pick up the pieces." Hi, Sheila.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Can you hear me?
Help me out.
Oh, my gosh. I have to tell you, I get this question minimum 2 to 5 times a day from patients, coworkers, and I'm up over my stack with it. I have chosen not to take the vaccine at this time for various reasons. And my sister works in the ORs, also medical professional, and we have different opinions, but she is even seeing patients showing up for surgery, wanting, basically demanding to know if the OR staff has had their vaccine yet. And as a healthcare provider, this is a tough position because typically our healthcare choices are our own. This isn't public information. And I'm not sure if it's an actual HIPAA violation, but it is a personal decision, and it does not affect the care that is provided. So what we have, I've tried various responses with my patients when they ask if I've had the vaccine yet. because I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know if they're coming from you get yours before I get mine, or you're not safe to provide my care until you get it, or, you know, they have every single person has been affected by COVID at every single level, which I think is why we have such a strong emotional response to this, even among family members and even among friends. And like I said, my sister and I are almost twins. We think alike, but we have two very different opinions, and that's okay. So ultimately, after weeks of trying different responses to try to remain neutral and professional, I try to keep an upbeat attitude, and I just say, I've got the email invitation to take the vaccine, and I'm really excited to see that it's starting to be available for our patients in the community now. Like, I just try to turn it right back on them and the community response. And then if they push, you know, I do feel quite comfortable just saying, you know, COVID's really affected everybody at so many levels, and it means different things to different people. And, you know, a couple of them, if depending on my relationship with them, I can tell them exactly what I think and why. And but most of them, it's not that in depth, and I just try to support them where they're at with the whole thing, because it, people are at different places. They've lost family members, or in the elderly that I deal with, many of them have lost friends at this point, and so it's pretty real for them, and there's a ton of fear and unknown as we continue to learn. But it's not just you and the radio show. It's everywhere that we're getting nailed with these questions.
Well, Sheila, you could say to someone, why do you ask? So that will let you know whether they're thinking, well, I'm not taking it myself, or I wondered what you thought as a healthcare professional, or I'm nervous about being treated by a healthcare professional who hasn't been vaccinated. You know, why do you ask? What exactly is it? And then that can direct you, because it sounds like you've got some well thought out answers there, and that can help you decide which one best fits the situation. I do know of one situation personally where someone I know is a nurse in an emergency room, and she said that several of the people in the emergency room are not yet wanting the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So, interestingly enough, I personally, I'd probably take it, okay, because I'm somewhat familiar with the science behind it, and it's not a live virus, and it's not a dead virus, okay? It's something that is involved snipping off that little corona piece there that's causing the damage. So if that's the case, it's a quantum leap forward in designing vaccines, you know. And I have heard isolated anecdotal cases where people will say, yeah, I have a friend who took the vaccine, and boy, they just got really, really sick. Well, okay, but the question becomes, was that the vaccine, or did they just get really sick? They got really sick. You know, you don't know.
Yeah, and typically I think we think that means their immune system is working and that the vaccine is working, is how I've looked at that. And my sister has definitely seen that among her coworkers, where they get a day or two of various side effects, and it's viewed as that means the vaccine is working for them.
Okay. All righty. Sheila, thank you so much.
Developing a response. Yeah, thanks
thank
for
you.
Your
thank
time.
You for calling. I appreciate that. I better take a break so that I don't get on a rambling roll and look at the clock. I'm Dr. Ray. I was going to say I'll be right back, but no. That's broadcast cliche. That's cliche because you're figuring 2 minutes from now, where am I going to go? Got it.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at solidarityhealthshare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. Where do you get information about God? How can you be sure what you read or what you are told by authorities is true? For if the things we are told about Christianity are true, tremendous demands are put upon our lives. And to say we believe them requires that we live them. Elton Trueblood said,
"We should be foolish not to use all the intelligence we can muster in order to try to know whether Christianity is true. To fail to give our minds loyally to this inquiry would not be so much irreverent as stupid."
It's important, therefore, that we get and understand the facts, evidences, and reasons for Christianity. Our life here and for eternity depends on such efforts. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under Resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
The EWTN home video highlight for January is A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda.
For two centuries, the ideologues of socialism or communism have used deceptive word jugglery to rebrand themselves as liberals or progressives.
Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
You can't see me, but I'm bossa nova chair dancing. It's chair dancing is something I learned in high school. If we would have dances, and I was too geeky and dorky to go ask a girl to dance, I would look cool sitting in my chair dancing, having them think, this guy can probably really dance. I wish he would ask me to dance. Little did they know, I may be able to dance sitting on a chair, but you get me up on my feet and it's not a pretty picture. I didn't confuse her. Laura from Indianapolis, I made the comment that teens are growing up with an enormous amount of sexual confusion regarding all kinds of things. And she said, "What, Dr. Ray? Hi, Laura."
"No, I think you're right." "I was calling to tell you you're right."
"Well, boy, I would have got you up sooner if that was the case."
"Well, what you said, I struggled in my marriage for the better part of a decade because of what I perceived as a challenge to my husband and I from other women, jealousy. And when you said something about being confused growing up, God put two and two in my mind together. And, you know, I watched MTV when I grew up in the 80s, and I believed what I saw, and I thought that love was feelings. And if, you know, some other woman displayed that she was attracted to my husband, that might spark love. or if my husband felt that for someone else, that might spark love. And I guess I was so uptight because I just saw all these other women. They're so much more amazing than I am. What have I got to offer?"
"You got no chance against them, right?"
No chance. But now as God has slowly worked on me and I can slowly start to see that that's not reality. But in my little mind, like these kids who are growing up confused, being told so many lies, they really feel and see and think that it is reality, that it is truth. And it takes so long to take that lie and turn it around and start believing the truth.
You answered.
That my husband and I are fulfilled in each other, and we don't need to feel threatened by other beautiful people around us.
You answered a question, Laura, I was going to ask you, but you anticipated it, which was, and you cited God's role in it, how did you happen to pull out of that kind of insecurity, which can really damage a marriage?
Grace. I went to see a counselor and I told him what my problem was, but I felt like I was going back every week and feeling more and more degraded because I was exploring these feelings that I had and why I had them. And I said, I can't afford you anymore. Tell me the bottom line. This is your last session. And he said, you have to find a way to trust your husband. And I think God started telling me, listen, those women are not the key to his salvation. I put you and your husband together for a reason. And that's your key to happiness and to life and to love. So embrace that and stop being distracted by the lies.
But the degree of your insecurity, there is an inverse relationship between as insecure as you were during those years and these women that just, for whatever the reason, various levels of liking your husband, complimenting your husband, not really a romantic threat, but you were insecure about that. Was part of that because he enjoyed the attention?
Probably. And my perception that was the case. He's at work all day around women all the time who, you know, it's really easy to look up to a good doctor, right? So anyway, I just confused those feelings with, wow, that might be love. And I have nothing to compete with that because I'm not around him flirting with him during the day, you know?
You're so around him flirting with him at night.
That's right.
You know, you got an awful lot more stuff to offer.
Yeah. Well, now I see it. But I feel for those kids growing up and, you know, the kindergartner that turns to another kindergartner and says, you know, based on what their teacher just told them, are you going to marry a boy or a girl when you grow up? That's when they see that as reality or as the truth, it's hard to turn that around.
The culture says, and more it says it louder and more consistently, that sexuality, as designed by God, is wired into humans, as a general rule, no longer is of any substance. It doesn't matter. It's all just uniform. Whatever and however you decide you want to express that is not only equivalent, but it's to be celebrated because it shows, the culture says, courage. Yeah, we so much recognize how easily early adolescents can get confused about everything. We so much see that. Any developmental psychologist will tell you that. But when it comes to sexuality, somehow we just accept that there's no confusion whatsoever, and whatever they decide is automatically accurate for the long haul. And we have research.
It's the opposite. We need the most guidance in our sexuality.
Well, sure.
There's we
no
do.
Question. Well, I'm glad that you realize that you and your husband are solid, that he loves you, and those women at work that are attracted to him, same way you were attracted to him, you're way ahead of them, way ahead of them.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, and something about the 13-year-old. I used to listen to my friends. They used to all come to me. And I would ask those questions like you talked about. But when they press you for, you know, well, what do you think about this? You just say, you don't need my approval for anything. I'll be your friend no matter how you feel about your sexuality. You know, I mean, that little girl is confused and she needs somebody to listen to her. She doesn't, you know, if you tell her that that's not how I want you to live your life, well, maybe someday she'll be ready to hear that, but initially, she just needs to hear that I'll be her friend no matter what.
Sounds good.
Anyway,
Laura, thank you very much.
The mom part of me.
You sound so much less confused than when you called 20 years ago. Really, you do. You know.
Yeah. By God's grace.
Thank you,
Thanks
dear.
Thanks for your help, Dr. Ray.
All right. Now, Maria, I don't have the time to take the question, the modern problem of fatherlessness affecting boys. Yeah, there's a lot of theorists who have talked about this, that the fact that unfortunately for many young men, fathers are not there. They're just not there. And one of the societal phenomena that's occurring right now one of the societal phenomena that's occurring right now is that more young women are just wanting babies. And whether there's a father to be in the picture at all is not really a relevant consideration. They want the baby for whatever personal reasons, for perhaps, sadly, maybe Facebook reasons. I don't know. But you're right. You call back, Maria. We can get into this in a little more detail. I'm Dr. Rinna. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you, Andrew Krucek and Eric Dumont, for all the help there at Ave Maria Radio as you cooperate with the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network in bringing this program to close to 210 listeners. Excited about that. Walk with God. Always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.